You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. I am not Alan Zog the Jedi. He is on vacation, but I am John English the Germs guy, and I am here with our trusty producer, Devin. Hello, Devin.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. We should break into this.
Yeah. Are you ready? Are you ready for what we get to talk about today? Because even without Alan, we've got quite the show, I think.
Yep. By the time people are listening to this, most of them anyway, the game against Boston will have already happened. We are doing this before the Boston game, and it is highly anticipated. There are a lot of storylines going into it. I'm wondering how many of them are going to bear fruit. I think most importantly, how are the fans going to treat Hayward when he comes back? What is the tributes they're going to show for him? My understanding from Andy Larson is that they're going to be doing some sort of video package for him. So it'll be interesting to see that. You have Jay Crowder going against his old teammates. You have Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum in year two of their careers going back and forth. What are you most interested in tonight?
Truth be told, I am most interested in how the Jazz play. Because the slump they were in and then the way they broke out of it in the last game, I just want to know if we're going to get the recent team or if we're going to get that kind of lacking team that we've seen so many times early this season. That's my big concern. But when it comes down to matchups, I want to see how Hayward performs under the pressure. You know, I expect he will play. He's supposed to play, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, but that first time back in an arena that was home for, what was it, 7 years? You know, when the fans are suddenly against you and you're feeling the animosity, and there's so much between the Utah fan base and Gordon. I mean, it's kind of a one-way street. I don't think he cares aside from the shots that he's taken. You know, he took that little shot at Quinn.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how he handles that. I think Gordon is a guy who wants to be liked. I really do. And the mental toughness that it will take, I want to see how he handles it, especially because we have to remember he's coming off that injury last season. He's not 100% yet, I don't think. What about you?
No. Yeah, his numbers have not been great since he's come back. Right now he's averaging 9.9 points, 5.6 rebounds, shooting 33% from three. His efficiency isn't there. He's only playing 25 minutes a game. Some of that might be health restrictions. Some of that might just be that Jason Tatum is playing better and he's getting more minutes. I know they're starting Hayward at the four. Maybe there's some adjustments that he's trying to still work with there. I'll be interesting to see if he ups his game tonight or if it rattles him tonight. I know a lot of the Jazz players are going to be motivated. They finally got that win streak. They got that losing streak broken. And now they're going to want to show Hayward on the home floor. This is still our team. You left. We're just fine without you.
Now, when it comes down to it, which Jazz player do you expect is going to show the most passion in this game?
Passion. Because I think Crowder's going to show a lot. Not necessarily, well, because he does every time. But it's his old team. I think he would like to have that passion against them. As far as who would show the most against Hayward, I think Rudy. I think Rudy was hurt on what happened because he said Hayward just wouldn't return his texts, and I think he took that a little personally. And I expect to see something out of him.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I remembered the Rudy Instagram post right after Gordon left. You know. These hoes ain't loyal, playing in the background, you know, and yeah. Rudy's the guy who's kind of taken over that leadership role. But another one that I'm kind of interested in is Joe. Because I could see Joe being that guy who has some things to say. Yeah, we're friends, but you left, you know, and if the Jazz can start off hot and play well and the crowd's behind them and against Hayward, I can see Joe throwing in those subtle comments in Hayward's ear if they get matched up against one another.
Something else I'd be interested in is Favors, because there was a time when Favors and Hayward were considered the co-leaders of this team. And Hayward obviously progressed a lot farther along. He wasn't as hampered by injuries as Favors, and Favors kind of became a little of a forgotten guy, but they're going to be starting against each other. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Favors want to score early on him and then just make sure that Hayward isn't able to get the ball on the other side. I think the first 5 minutes of that matchup is going to be really interesting too.
That will be. You throw the ball into the paint. You know, Gordon, I remember when he was with the Jazz, had this great play where Blake Griffin tried to back him down and couldn't. Now, I don't know if Hayward can actually match up against Favors. You know, Favors is a bigger guy than Griffin was. We'll just kind of have to wait and see how that plays out. What do you think about Mitchell, though? Because Donovan came in after the fact. Donovan's the hero now. And I can see him being one of those guys who, again, if the Jazz can get it going, Donovan kind of smiling and smirking and, yeah, I'm the guy you left. This is my team. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I would love to see that confidence out of Donovan, especially after he had that big bounce back game earlier this week.
Yeah, I hope he's able to keep himself in control, because we need to remember Boston is a really good team. They're a really talented team. This is the type of team where, with the up and down way the Jazz have been playing, this could go any direction. I could see a close game. I could see a blowout. I hope that he has his own mind on the ball, because he's got to deal with Jaylen Brown. You're going to have Kyrie Irving, who's going to be wanting to make his own statements. This is the fourth road game in a row for Boston, and they lost their first two, and they won in overtime against the Suns. So they are not exactly playing their best coming in. And, you know, knowing all that, I would think Jazz would have the advantage. But the Jazz, they have not been good at home. It's been really surprising. Let's see, was Dallas their only home win?
Yes, that was their first home win.
Jeez. Yeah, I hope now that they've given the fans the taste of a home win that they are able to pull this.
I hope it's like that first basket. You know what I mean? You're struggling. Yeah. Once you see a shot go in, it gets a lot easier. That's the hope.
Yeah, and after this Boston game, 10 of their next 12 are on the road. And normally that would be a big concern, but the Jazz are, 4-2 on the road so far?
Yeah, that's
so. Who knows?
That's brutal either way. You know what I mean? To be out on the road that much. But if you're struggling at home, maybe stepping away from it for a minute is going to be what's best for them, and it'll pay dividends later in the season. You know what I mean? When they get those home games coming back.
Yeah, they're very home heavy in like January and February.
So,
which is ideal.
With this, I know you said it can go any way. Any predictions? And you don't have to say, oh, I predict this will be the score. Any predictions player-wise, you know, themes of the game? What are you expecting coming into this?
I expect the Jazz to focus on Hayward and not let him get off. I'm worried that this is going to be the kind of game where Kyrie Irving is going to go off for 30. That would be my main worry. I'm actually going to just pull up. Let's see what 538 has to say about this game. Jazz are favored by 6.5.
Okay.
I hope for a win. I expect a win. I don't know how confident I am in that, since Dallas was their first home win, but I really hope that they learned from the Dallas game and they use that as a launching point to turn things around, and they take advantage of the Celtics, who are wobbly themselves.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think that's key for me. Boston is not the team that we expect them to be at the end of the season. As they are assembled, absolutely, but the way they are playing, no way. Boston should be a lot better by the end of the year, as should the Jazz. And so I think that keeps this one close. I don't see a blowout happening either way. I think you see a victory, you know, either way, probably right about where that's at, 6 points, give or take one direction or the other.
Yeah. Okay. So after the Boston game, they go on the road, and their next two road games are Memphis and Dallas. They are going to want their revenge against Memphis, and Dallas is going to want their revenge against them. How do you see those two going?
Truthfully, I think the Jazz need both of them. You know, I don't know what's going on against Memphis. If it's just they can't handle Marc Gasol, they really should be able to. You know, both losses have been at home when it comes to Memphis. It's going to be tougher on the road, I think. But I got to think that the Jazz can find a way to win against Memphis. And then with Dallas, I think Utah has the better team. And I think that showed in that last game. As long as things kind of go, you know, how they looked last time, I think the Jazz should win both of those games. What about you?
Yeah, they need them both. They should win both. But Memphis has just proven to be a really difficult matchup with healthy Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. And the Memphis game, the main tool that really seemed to work for them was feeding it Marc Gasol threes at the top of the key. You force Rudy to come out, and that opens up everything else. Rudy can't slag off of Gasol. He will hit those threes. And so it really is up to Favors and Crowder when they're in to guard everything down low. And I'm hoping that by the time they're playing him for the third time, that Quinn has figured out a scheme that allows them to, you know, put their foot back on their throat. Memphis is 6-4, but two of those six are from the Jazz. Jazz need to get one back.
Right, right. One thing to keep in mind, that second loss to Memphis happened when Mitchell was out. And I don't remember. Was Alec Burks playing that night?
I don't remember.
Because when you're missing Burks and Mitchell, that's a huge absence of offense. And so having them both in the lineup, I think, completely changes the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to come down to that defense a little bit. But as long as you can kind of keep pace with them, I don't think Memphis is a great offensive team. At least traditionally they haven't been. I don't know how they sit, you know, this season.
Yeah, they're middle of the pack. They're 18th right now.
Yeah, see, they've always been a grit and grind defensive team. So if the Jazz can get their offense going, I think they have a good chance to win that game.
Yeah, you have right now you have Jazz 13th in offense, and Memphis is, what did I just say, 18?
Yeah.
Boston's 27, boy. But defense, Boston's number one, Memphis is number five, Jazz is 16. They still haven't.
Okay. Yeah, they haven't found their identity yet, it sounds like.
Yeah.
What do you attribute that to? You know, I mean, you think about this, the Jazz were the best offense last season, especially with Rudy in the lineup. Their players have not changed. You know, I mean, you lose Jarebko, you add Grayson Allen, you bring in Niang. I don't know who else did anyone else leave?
No, that was it. It was just Jarebko. I know they're saying a lot about player movement. I don't think you can blame that much on it anymore. It's a factor, but there's more going on. There's been more than one post-game conference that Quinn has talked about selfishness. I think the effort hasn't been there as consistently at times, and I wonder if part of it was just the confidence of, we're a second-round team coming into this. Everyone's back together. We're going to automatically get 50 wins. And the beginning of the season has been a big wake-up call. You know, their preseason was pretty easy, too. They had a pretty smooth preseason. So now the reality of the NBA schedule's kicking in. Teams that they expected to be bad are good. You know, it's going to take a few games. Ricky Rubio is having his traditional slow start. They really need him to get back into second half of the season mode. A lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Teams that we expected to be bad are actually doing quite well. I mean, you look at Memphis for one, Sacramento, you know, struggles with other teams. It's an interesting season thus far.
Yeah, I tweeted out yesterday. I don't know, it's probably not still true, but if the playoffs had started yesterday, Jazz and three other playoff teams in the West would be out, and your four lottery teams last year that would currently be in are Nuggets, Clippers, Grizzlies, and Kings.
Yeah, I don't think anyone predicted that. That's but it bizarre. Is season. It is early in the season. Yep. What about Dallas? You feel that one's going to be a win or
easy win?
Okay.
Even they had pockets where the Jazz didn't play well in the second half, but it was still just fine. And that's kind of where I see Dallas anyway. Dallas is 24th in defense and somewhere in the middle in offense, 17th. They are 3-8. You know, I was looking at what one of those opponents' threads after the game, and there are a lot of fans in Dallas who feel like the Rick Carlisle era should end. Yes, he won them their ring, but it's been a while, and they are very frustrated with how they don't see him adjusting. I mean, this is just fans, but I'm wondering if there's truth to that. I'm wondering if this should be the last year of Rick Carlisle. He's a widely respected, very good coach, but I just wonder if he's just not the right fit there anymore.
Well, that finals win, that was 2011? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, 10 or 11.
So,
it's been a while.
It has been a minute. And that game that the Jazz just won against Dallas, I think that one was closer than it really should have been. You go back to the end of the third quarter, Favors gets hit with the technical, and then it gets hit with the flagrant two. I think Barea hit the free throw. You know, then they go 1 of 2 from the line on the foul, get the ball, side out. They get an and one situation. You know what I mean? The Jazz give up 5 points in the last 25 seconds or whatever it was. So,
yep.
You know, that really gave them some momentum coming into that quarter. That's a big swing right there. You know, I think that brought the lead down to 13 or something like that, whereas, you know, they were well above that. So, yeah, hopefully that's the case. They can at least take care of business on that one for sure. But we'll see. The hope is that we're running into a 4-game win streak at that time.
Yeah, Dallas is going to be viewing the Jazz the same way the Jazz are viewing Memphis. Jazz have already beat Dallas twice. Dallas wants revenge. I don't think they'll get it. Memphis has beat the Jazz twice. Jazz are a better team than Dallas, and I think revenge will be a little more likely. It's my hope. I mean, there's a very, very good chance that this struggling team could go 3-0 this week.
That there's a good chance they could go 1-2. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yep. We'll see how it all plays out.
Okay, anything else on the Jazz?
I just have to ask, you like the throwback look now that you've seen it live on the court?
Yes, especially that viral clip of Donovan's dunk in the purple.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, fantastic dunk. Had a nice putback too.
Yep.
Okay, I think that's it for Jazz Talk then.
All right, let's go to NBA News and Notes. I would say one of the bigger stories around the league is Tyson Chandler is no longer in Phoenix and he joined the Lakers. He made an instant impact. I think this is a very good pickup for the Lakers. And he looks like a piece that they needed to cement themselves as a playoff team. I believe the Lakers were going to be a playoff team because they have LeBron. Their other pieces have been really sketchy. Tyson is the perfect type of vet to bring into that situation, I think.
Tyson Chandler is probably one of the better centers that LeBron has played with, right? I mean, he's had guys that have played at the center's position. He's had Bosch, he's had Kevin Love playing there, but as a true traditional center, Chandler's one of the best. I mean, he's a defensive force. He's a smart basketball player, and he's been in the league for such a long time. You know, there's a reason he's stuck around.
Yeah.
I'll ask you this.
His IQ is high.
Go ahead. In terms of this, when I think about this, I think Tyson Chandler is a better acquisition than most of what they got off season. You think they got Rondo, they got Lance, they got JaVale. True or false? Chandler's maybe the best acquisition they've gotten to put with Bron.
Yeah. I can see that for the reason that Tyson is a Shane Battier type glue guy for a team. And that's what they really need. They got a lot of slippery guys, talented guys that you just really have no idea what consistency you're going to get out of them. I mean, there's a reason that the Lakers offseason kind of became, other than LeBron, a joke.
Right.
Tyson, I think, is a terrific vet to slide next to LeBron and help everyone get that winning mentality back in L.A. And I say this despite the fact that he's been stuck in Phoenix.
Yeah, I don't know why he was in Phoenix, to be honest.
Money.
Yeah, he got his money. How long has he been in the league, though? I mean, if he wants his ring, he should have gone after it a little bit sooner. I mean, can you imagine if they had put him in Cleveland?
Oh, man. I feel like he's somewhere around the 2004 draft or...
That sounds about right. He's been in the league about as long as Bron has.
I feel like he was a high pick too. Wasn't he like the second pick in his year? Let's see. Tyson Chandler, 17 years. 2001-2002 season was his first.
Wow.
So he was in the 2001 draft. And yeah, he's been in Phoenix since the 2016 season. So glad he got out. Seems like he would have been a pickup for Phoenix trying to turn around then.
Yeah. Like, and that just didn't happen.
After they did surprisingly well with Hornacek, they're like, great, let's get Tyson in here and make something of this. I'm trying to find his money. There it is. Yeah, he was making $13 million a year in Phoenix.
Which seems,
so he got his money.
That's a bargain contract right now. But, you know, at that stage in your career, that is some pretty good cash.
Yeah. He had one all-star year. He did win a ring. Who did he win his ring with?
Oh, he did?
I swear I
Was
just
it Dallas?
Saw a ring logo. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he was in Dallas 2010-2011. That's the year they won, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense then. Okay. Yeah, you've got your ring. Go get paid.
There it is. Yeah. He got his ring in Dallas and then he went to go get paid.
Okay.
Then he went to the Knicks, tried to make something with them. That might have been the year that the Knicks went to the finals, or not the finals, the Eastern Conference Finals. They had one year they did that.
I can't remember them being good.
Yeah, one year. I know. There was one year Mike Woodson got them to the Eastern Conference Finals, and then they were terrible after that ever since. And that eventually Woodson was fired, I think, 2 years later. Boy, I went down that rabbit hole. So, yeah. Good pickup by them. Tyson's in the twilight of his career. I think in LA with LeBron is probably a good place to finish your career.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, anything else on the NBA?
I was going to put it in quick hits, but I'll just put it here. How do you feel about that? I think it was a 48-point game that Jamal Murray dropped on the Celtics, and I believe he took a shot towards the end, you know, had the win secured. But he was going for 50, and Kyrie did not like it. And Irving throws the ball into the crowd at the end of the game. Who's in the wrong here? Is it wrong to go for 50 when you've got the win and the game's, you know, the game's done? Or is it more wrong, I guess, to take the game ball and throw it into the crowd because you're offended by that?
More wrong to throw it into the crowd. I understanding, respecting the game, respecting the other team. Many players stat pad, but many other players don't appreciate it, but you should never throw the ball into the crowd.
Yeah, I didn't hear of any fine for that. I'm surprised we didn't. You know, it seems like something where anything has the potential to adversely impact a fan, that the league would have something to say about it. But, you know, and I kind of understand going for it. If you got 48 points, how many times in your career, unless you're one of the superstars, how many times do you have a chance to go for 50? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's a young kid. Let him go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame Murray wanting to go for it. I remember one game where Gordon Hayward was one rebound away from a triple double, and Ty Corbin took him out of the game, and so Hayward has still, if I remember right, Hayward has still never had a triple double. And I remember a lot of guys making old school jokes. I was like, Ty's old school, don't care about stats. I think that really hurt Gordon. I think it really hurt him that, yeah, the Jazz were winning, but you took him out before he could try for that triple-double. There are a lot of players like that where they're like, when they're aware of their stats and they know they're close and you don't let them try, I think that affects a lot of them.
And at that time, I'm sure all of us were very upset that he got pulled out. But now I think everyone's kind of on Ty Corbin's side of good job, Ty. Good job. It's one of those things. I think these guys should be allowed to go for it. If you've got a career high, you know what I mean? Even if you're up, you know, you want to let the players have fun with a game, because it is at the end of the day, a game, you know, and these opportunities to set your personal records and to do these things that you've never done before. You know, Murray may not get another chance at 50 for a few years. You never know what's going to happen. You know, there are most of the guys in the league never score 50 points.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Okay, let's go to Devin's quick hits.
All right, we'll stick with basketball, but I want to kind of jump over to the college side. Duke looked really impressive in their win. I think it was against Kentucky. Dropped 118 points, and people are, Steve Kerr specifically, you know, comparing Zion to DeBron. Do you think that is a fair comparison?
No.
Okay.
We talk about once in a generation players. Bron is a once in generation. I think Zion will be transformative, but LeBron just might be the best player to ever play the game. So let's not go there quite yet.
Yeah. Let's not jump there for a kid who played one game out of high school. Okay. NFL wise, just a quick hit. Dez finally signs. Looks like he's joining the Saints on a 1-year deal. Is that a good acquisition for a team that's doing so well already?
It's tremendous for Dez. Saints, more the merrier. Yeah, I think everybody wins in that.
Okay. He will be making his return to Dallas in week 13, so something we'll see what happens there. One thing we missed on the NBA. They're going to televise the All-Star draft. I don't even have to ask. That's the right move.
Yep.
Okay.
That is tremendous.
We'll touch on local college football. The Utes will be playing against Oregon. It's a tough matchup, and they will be doing so without their starting quarterback and their starting running back. Both are out for the season. How do you see this one going?
You know, last week I put my faith in Utah finally figuring this out and on their way to really good things, and of course, right when I do that is when they lose. It's going to be tough because Oregon is a good team in their own right, and I just don't know if Utah can overcome that. So I think Oregon's going to win this one.
Okay. Utah State has a matchup against San Jose State. Utah State doing very well this season. We talk about them every week. It's got to just keep going, right? I don't see this being an upset.
Yeah. I feel good about Utah State. Any game they're favored in, I say they win.
Okay. And it looks like BYU will be playing against UMass. That one looks to be on the road tomorrow morning.
Yep.
How are you feeling after that last second loss? You know, it's kind of a last second loss. You had a shot at the very end. How do you feel going into this one? They're coming off, what is it, a 2-game losing streak? Is this where they finally right the ship?
Yeah. To quote Pete from Mad Men, not great, Bob. I just don't feel good about any game they're going to have the rest of the year.
It's been so interesting. They had that good game against Hawaii, you know what I mean? And
that good game against Wisconsin.
Right, right. But I mean, their offense looked great, and the switch at quarterback looked like it might work. But since then, the offense has been fairly stagnant. You know, they put up only 6 points against Northern Illinois. They get the 16. They can't convert at the very end against Boise State. UMass, to me, I think is a game where they should, even though it's on the road, they should put up some good points.
Yeah, they should. I mean, they sure did against Hawaii, but blech.
All right.
They scored 28 points in 2 weeks. No, not 28. I'm looking at the wrong column. They have scored 22 points in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So it's got to get better. I hope it gets worse at the end of the season, but it's got to get better for the next couple of weeks.
I guess that's the way they can win is if their defense gets enough turnovers. Okay, their defense has allowed 28 points in 2 weeks. That's pretty darn good.
Right.
If you allow 28 points in 2 weeks, that tells me your team is 2-0, but they're 0-2 because their offense only scored 22. So, you know, I think it's up to the defense to get those interceptions, get those turnovers, put this hapless offense into positions. That's how they would be able to pull off a UMass win.
All right. We'll see what happens. I think that's it for quick hits. I don't have much else, so we'll keep them kind of short this week. Okay. Let's jump over to pop culture. You had a movie to review and one that I am very curious about.
Yes, I saw Bohemian Rhapsody, the biopic about Freddie Mercury and Queen. It's very entertaining to watch, to sit through. It goes through a lot of their music, shows a lot of behind the scenes on how certain songs are written. They tell his story in a PG-13 movie, so there's a lot of dancing around his sexuality, but they don't get like too explicit or anything. But it does touch on his the struggles he had with being bisexual in the 70s and 80s when people just didn't talk about that, know much about it. I thought Rami Malek, who is best known from the USA Network's Mr. Robot TV show, he was really good as Freddie Mercury. He makes the movie. As far as the actual story, you know, I go back and I look at Wikipedia and I see what the real story is. They changed a lot. They left out a lot. For my taste, I wish they had not taken so many liberties because they don't really flesh out the characters of the other three guys in the band. It feels like they're just there to, you know, encourage Freddie or badger Freddie or just kind of like revolve around him and okay. Don't really get a sense of who they are. Mike Myers is in it and that's great. But the character he plays didn't exist, you know, stuff like that. So I thought it was a decent tribute. I think especially with them making the climax of the movie, the Live Aid concert where Queen stole the show, I thought that was a really nice thing to do for Freddie's memory. And then it's kind of in the epilogue where they just give notes at the end of the movie on how, you know, he eventually died of AIDS and all that stuff. But I kind of appreciated that the movie ended with us getting to see him on a high note, and not just watch him like slowly suffer and die. So I like that aspect about it. It's only at 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I completely understand why. I've listened to some reviews of people who were like giant fans of Queen who were really mad at how much they changed or left out. So there is that element to it. Overall, I think it's a very entertaining movie, and especially because you just get to sit there and listen to 2 hours of Queen music.
So if you like the music, you should enjoy the movie, but don't plan on getting a documentary, you know, true to life representation of the band or of Freddie, you know, completely. You're saying there's a lot of give in this movie to make it what it is.
Yep.
Is there like a semi-fiction category? I know we have fiction, we have nonfiction. We need something that kind of blurs that line, don't we?
Well, more and more movies you will see will say stuff like inspired by a true story.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means they're taking all kinds of licenses with what actually happened. I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is technically inspired, but it has hardly anything to actually do with Ed Gein or what actually happened. But they can say inspired by a true story, you know?
All right.
A lot of movies do that.
Yeah, yeah. So go see it. Enjoy it for what it is. You know, it. If nothing else, you're going to get a great soundtrack out of it.
Yep.
Okay. I don't really have anything in the pop culture this week. I haven't found a new series to dive into on Netflix. I haven't been to the movies, so there's not much I can say. So I'll have
Did
something.
Did you ever watch Ozark?
I have not started it yet. No. So
okay, I'm in the middle of season 2, so maybe we can talk about that one if you want to give that one a try.
Yeah, yeah, I can start that one up this week, and let's have a talk about it next week.
Okay.
All right. I'll let you take this away, John.
All right. We'd like to thank everyone for listening. Please leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes, and I will just say, bye, everybody.